We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And today we preview the Lakers play-in game against the New Orleans Pelicans. And what an unusual bit of circumstances, having been the team that the Lakers just played. Mike, they told you guys, hey, you know, pack for an extra game because we might be here a little bit. And that's exactly what happened. And so oftentimes when you go into these kind of circumstances, D, you're looking at a team that you haven't just scouted, you haven't just played. I think there's benefits and I think there's downsides to that, right? Mike, you, I think, accurately brought up the whole idea of game two is hard if you win that game one on the road. And that's exactly what the Lakers are going to be trying to do. But Darius, I want to start off our preview framing things through a defensive lens, because I think that's really the key to this game is the Lakers' level of defensive intensity and attention to detail. I thought they came out great on that end, and that's sort of the best version of this Lakers team, is a team that's defending its ass off and then has enough offensive talent across the board to where they're going to score points. There is going to be a guy that's having a night more often than not that isn't LeBron or AD. And so I think that's sort of the kind of idea of where the Lakers could be, but I think it all starts on the defensive end. So talk to me about this second matchup against the Pelicans through a defensive lens.
A lot was made by us and by pretty much everyone about Zion's inability to get it going and then the credit given to LeBron. We, as Laker fans, I think highlighted what LeBron was doing. And I think more nationally, folks will look at what Zion did not do or how he was ineffective, right? Because that's always, you always have to find your framing. And I think Zion is a punching bag of sorts for his underachievements at times and for a lot of other reasons. So from a defensive perspective, Pete, I'm looking at this almost solely from the idea of, well, the other team has coaches too. Zion's a wonderful player and a great, great talent. And while we highlighted a lot of the things that LeBron was able to do to him, and I think the ways that LeBron has the right combination of physical tools and smarts to limit Zion, that doesn't mean that there aren't still tactical ways the Pelicans can try to optimize Zion even within that framework, right? And so, Mike, for me, it's more, if we're going to talk about defense, then let's put our Pelicans hats on and look at what are the Pelicans going to try to do to get Zion going and how to potentially attack LeBron or even get Zion in positions where he is better equipped to attack the defense and get himself going. When Zion was working in isolation or working with a live dribble, I think that that's death for him against this Lakers defense. They are able to load up on him. They are able to sag off of him, and they are able to then leverage all of LeBron's tools while also having Anthony Davis available as a help option. And so defensively, I'm trying to then think about, okay, well, then what do you do to try to get Zion going? One is using more ball screen actions, like for point Zion, right? So still giving Zion the ball, but using screen actions for him, but not having them be big to big screens where the Lakers can switch. So if they screen with Brandon Ingram, well, guess what? Rui is guarding BI. They're just going to switch that. If they use a big guy, great. Now Anthony Davis has Zion, and that's that. I'm expecting to see more inverted screen actions with CJ screening for him, those screen actions in order to try to get a small switched onto him or put the Lakers in positions where they're trying to hedge with a small against Zion and then putting LeBron in a situation where he has to recover. The other thing I'm looking for, guys, is running more off-ball screen actions for Zion to catch the ball on the move so that he doesn't have to face a loaded up defense with LeBron up front and everyone sort of like geared up and forming a wall behind him. And so to me, it starts with Zion. The Pelicans, I thought, actually did a pretty good job of finding stuff for CJ, finding stuff for BI, and even finding stuff for their other perimeter players. But if Zion is going to score 15 points on inefficient shooting, they have very little chance of winning this basketball game. And so I kick that idea to both of you that it's really, from a defensive standpoint, it's how can the Lakers continue to stay on top of the Zion matchup and not let New Orleans flip that in their direction?
So I think you're spot on with the idea of inverted screens and probably trying to target Austin or D'Lo. In that case, it would probably be Austin because he's the guy that's going to be on CJ McCollum, rather, whereas D'Lo is probably going to start on Herb Jones. And so I do think that it's sort of trying to find an entry point for a guy that, you know, that insane Zion stat of like 97% of his shots are at the rim, where when everybody knows where the end of this play is, or when everybody knows where this play is going to end, there's a certain amount of planning that you can do. And when Anthony Davis is one of the people on the back line of that, I also thought that Rui was super important, just like getting a hand up, tapping a ball away, being physical, just the way he's been playing the forward position and just on the offensive end, just the baseline cuts have been great to see throughout the course of the season. But continuing from that defensive end, just it's a group effort that I do think, though, is a LeBron and AD kind of tag team effort. And Mike, you always make the LeBron and AD type of point. I think on this year's team and this year in these playoffs, obviously we're in the play-in right now, but this early portion of the playoffs and going forward, how they are able to impact the game on the defensive end is going to be more of a story than ever. And this idea of those two sort of kind of giving a tag team effort to be able to take away a guy like Zion at the rim as much as they can. Now, we'll see if they're able to do it again. But I do think that this is one of the stories of this year's team, is how much can they carry of the defense as they have a really talented offensive supporting cast around them.
I was watching the game over in the start of the game, and remember, the Lakers make their first five shots and they go up 11-4, and New Orleans calls timeout and they take Valanciunas out and they put Larry Nance Jr. in. And then the first play out of that timeout is the play that we talked about in the last pod, where Austin swats a CJ McCollum pull up. And then, you know, the Lakers go down, then they get another stop on the next trip. But I want to focus first on the start of the game, because this is where, you know, head coaches are, you know, scripting is too strong, but they're wanting certain things to happen. And the Pelicans go right to Zion on most of the early possessions. And Zion, just like in the in-season tournament, he gets the ball, looks up. LeBron is backed off and he's like, well, I'm not attacking him down there. So what am I going to do? And then a couple of times they try to set a screen in certain ways. And then Anthony Davis is just kind of lurking. And in Valanciunas, the first possession, he gets a three that the Lakers like, fine, go ahead, take it. At the top of three, misses. A couple trips later, he ends up with the ball in the corner. LeBron is close enough to close out if he needs to, but it's not an 80s on Zion. And it's just like, Willie Green has to be sitting there like, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. Mm-hmm. So before we even get to the Zion thing, and like, how do they get him going? And you guys just gave some kind of good suggestions and some smart suggestions as to how to unlock it a little bit. Like, I don't know that New Orleans even is sure what their best personnel groups are to go against the Lakers. And I guess it would be this, the one that they went to with Nance, but I mean, I don't know. Like, they have their other problem is that Ingram and McCollum kind of don't really help each other a ton in the way that they play. And that's been an issue all year. You can look at their two-man ratings. Like, they're not great for this team. McCollum got unlocked when Ingram was hurt, and like Ingram got unlocked a little bit earlier when McCollum was missing a little bit of time. So I that would be where I'm going to start. Whereas the Lakers know exactly how they want to attack whatever the Pelicans group is. And it's not like they'd even really need to go over it. LeBron, you know, being on the court as much as he is just going to point around and be like, McCollum, you come up. Zion, you come up. AD, go set that screen. D'Lo, stand in that corner. Austin, you're initiating now out of the screen roll. Like, it's just, they're getting such good looks.
Yeah.
Those first five shots that they hit were all great looks. It was like layups, a wide open corner three, and like a little AD floater when he attacked Jonas. And that was, again, before LeBron even decided to get downhill at all. So I think that I can't make a great compelling argument for what the Pelicans can do differently from an X's and O's standpoint and all that. I can make an argument that it's game two. They're going to hit you with the punch early. They're going to play harder. The Lakers could be on their heels a little bit. The crowd gets into it. Shots stop falling, that kind of thing. But just what happens sometimes when one team is better than the other, but the other team, it's just tough to mentally and get over a team twice. But I'm having trouble coming up with just like a scheme or a rotation or like that kind of thing with this level of LeBron and AD engagement and kind of like the lack of the right kind of size for New Orleans.
For me, D, I think BI having a monster shot making game, and if he weren't just coming off of an injury, that'd be a lot easier said than done. But that to me is probably their best path, because I do think that the Lakers have some answers for what Zion likes to do.
Yes, they do. I also think, though, that if...
Darius, by the way, you see what's going on here?
Yeah, it's soup time. It's always soup time. Hey, it's cool where I am, too. So are you eating gumbo? Some New Orleans soup?
I am in New Orleans, and I thought it was going to be gumbo. This is actually vegetable soup. That's what they had in the meal room. So I'm hoping for some gumbo for dinner. Yeah, okay. Sorry, back to you.
All right. We'll have a bowl for me, too, if it is gumbo. Pete, I think you're spot on about finding ways to get BI going. I also think that higher level shooting games in general for their best players, which is like for their best perimeter players, which is, I thought CJ shot the ball well, but I also thought he has another level that he could get to. He showed that against the Warriors. And so BI, CJ, and honestly, Trey Murphy as well. It's not just BI go out and get us 40. The Lakers have ways to try to stop that, right? And they will start to blitz the ball handler, and they will start to do other things defensively. The reason why I'm still sort of stuck on this idea of Zion being the key, because if New Orleans just abandons getting Zion going in any way, they're going to be cutting off their nose to spite their face. We can say all we want, oh, well, LeBron and AD, like, they're the antidote. And if Willie Green says that to himself, he's going to be making a mistake. Like, you need your great players to be great in order to win games like this, and finding ways to get Zion downhill, finding ways to leverage what he does best. And so if it's those inverted ball screens, if it's him catching the ball on the move, if it's him running more DHOs with their players and taking advantage of LeBron being well below the level of the ball, there are tactical things that they're going to need to try beyond the let's just play harder. And I expect them to empty the clip from a playbook standpoint, Pete, like, because them sitting on their hands or just saying, go play harder tonight. Yes, I think playing harder can get them more transition baskets, can get them more offensive rebounds, help them find a shooting rhythm across the board, right? But if, again, I hate to be a broken record here, but if Zion is 5 for 18, that's it. Basically, you're going to need so much more from BI and CJ at that point that that's a difficult hill to climb. And so let's go to break here. And on the other side, we can keep it going with the defensive talk, but also start to get into the offensive side with the ball.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, I want to make a point about Zion relative to LeBron and AD, and then ask Pete kind of a more specific question about what New Orleans might do X and O wise. But when you get to playoff basketball, and this is what this is, like having to win one game, scouting report, what does this other team do? This is why the LeBron AD being able to beat you in multiple ways on both ends of the floor is different from a player like Zion, or even who's their second best player. Is it Brandon Ingram? You know, probably. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Ingram's got some defensive stuff in his bag, but that's not really been his role on that team. They kind of need his creation, and they need his ISO play, and they need his ball handling. And so he's not being tasked with the tough assignment and, hey, go use your length on this guy. So, you know, he's not really like a two-way player in that sense. And Zion is far from a two-way player. He is not unleashed. I mean, he does have some potential on defense, but he has not unleashed a lot of that. So when, like, this gets to the crux of everything. If Zion is not able to be Zion against this specific matchup, which you have, I think, correctly cited as probably the worst in the NBA for the way that he could attack. And I think Denver would be up there as well for similar reasons. Jokic being camped out, Aaron Gordon being able to meet the physicality, like that kind of thing. But then what is he going to do out there? You know, how is he going to go impact LeBron or AD defensively? No. Is he going to switch out to a guard and really pressure Austin or D'Lo? No. Is he going to spot up and shoot in space in the corner? No. So if you're just sort of conceding that, and then you're like, all right, well, let's run a lot of stuff for, let's do a CJ and a Brandon Ingram pull up jump shot type of a night. You know, maybe that's the way to try and beat the Lakers. Maybe you try to do some stuff with like that the Kings do, where if you can try to get a lot of motion, like when it's Fox and Monk, but their guards aren't as fast as that. And like, you know,
it's just not how they play as much. Yeah, it's not really.
And it's not how they play, yeah. You know? So like I'm, you know, Pete, the last thing I think that I think is going to happen, I don't think this is going to happen, but I think if you're New Orleans, you're like, well, we're the seventh seed. We get to host the worst case. We get to host the winner of Kings Warriors. And those are two teams that we just beat in their gyms. And Zion can play against both of those teams. You know, Zion, sure, Draymond has some answers, but we saw they don't have the rim protection behind Draymond, you know, to really get into Zion's head in the way that LeBron and AD do. And I was 2 feet away from it, and you can see it on Zion's face. You can see it on his face. He does not want that. And I get it. So that's kind of my question to you, though. So if you're Willie Green, or you're in that room, and you're like, oh man, like what am I supposed to do here with Zion? And can you lean into a perimeter, like a jump shooting type of mid range kind of, and without just like limiting Zion, and then you don't have the pop that you want. So I don't know the answer to that.
I think they need to speed the game up. I think it needs to be a high ball pressure, high turnover game in terms of, and getting out into transition, and those threes being more pull-ups in transition, because you just got a loose ball and got out on the run. I think that just really, when you have those sorts of half court issues that are difficult workarounds, you know, one of the answers to don't get into the half court. And they have a couple of ways to do that. You know, they've got good fast break principles. Again, though, this is one of the things that's tough, that is a dynamic they're going through, is with, they play differently with BI in there, right? It's not the best version of them, obviously, has BI. It's just, he is more, you're talking about that more five out type of style. Well, you know, they don't really play that way. A big part of it is because BI is an on-ball guy, and that's not really the style of basketball that, and same is true with McCollum, although they did a little more of that in Portland. But so they're going through this, you know, BI just came back, and so we just have to play a little bit differently and figure out who are we and what we're doing. And this is a really difficult circumstance to be under those conditions, Mike. So I think that's part of what's going on here too.
So Darius, the Pelicans did beat the Lakers and they blew them out. That was on December 31st, and the Lakers were coming from basically like the most ridiculous back-to-back that I remember in recent years, where like the Lakers, we were in Minnesota the night before and flew all the way damn down the Mississippi River. It got into New Orleans at some ungodly hour, and you know, and then the Lakers came out and just kind of didn't have it from a energy standpoint.
Rui got hurt in that game too.
And Rui got hurt, and it was just, it was like Alvarado had six steals of like coming up behind guys back. He had one on AD, right? And what was that? Was that in the first quarter? It's definitely in the first half. Mm-hmm. So it was like that to me was, I don't know if I'm just defaulting to that, because I saw it. Like I saw them be able to win a game, and then they get downhill, and then
yeah, that's,
Murphy's
how.
Coming in with energy, and Herb Jones like that. Right. The game sped up, and the Lakers are kind of like, oh, well, you know, we do at least have that in there. Not consciously almost, but just sort of like we can go home if we don't win this game. You know, like that security that was not there last night. LeBron and AD are way too smart to think that we're trying to go to Golden State as the number 10. They're like, that's not happening. And so I think while as an athlete, you're really trying hard to push that out, and nobody's going to do that better than LeBron, but it is something that can creep in to the back of the to the back of the mind. And by the way, that is not accounting at all for Denver versus OKC and that whole conversation that we already dealt with yesterday, which I don't think they would do it like that. But that kind of, Darius, is the way that something like that could come about if the game starts to go a certain way. And the Lakers, instead of being up, 11-4, being up seven into the first time out, if they're down seven into the first time out, they're calling timeout. And Darvin Ham's like, guys, like, you know, and that they basically have to muster the mental energy and acuity to get out of that, as opposed to sort of keep doing what they're doing that's working so well.
Yeah, and I think the security of the 7-8 game cuts both ways. And so I do agree that for New Orleans, they understand that it would be against two teams that they just beat, but the Lakers should feel pretty confident hosting a home play-in game as well. One of the things I wanted to present to you guys is we had a long conversation, or not a long conversation, but we took a detour in our last pod, and we talked about great players and sort of putting your head down and getting to the basket and trying your best to will your way to something. And any game that involves a rim attacking player, one of the first concerns I have is foul trouble for Anthony Davis, or an extended stretch of the game without AD. Pete, how much of a concern is it to you that BI and Zion just decide to do, like, put their head down and say, oh, you're sagging off me, LeBron? Guess what? I'm going to drive anyway. And I'm going to try to get to the foul line, and I'm going to try to change the momentum of the game this way. Is that something that you've thought about in terms of the defense and what the Lakers have to do defensively in order to stay disciplined and not foul while also still playing a physical brand of defense?
I think that's a huge factor, and something that could be a vulnerability, especially when that player is coming off of, he left the last game with a back issue, right? So he's probably not feeling great And so, yeah, being physical with that type of player. That the thing is, though, is that when they have Valanciunas in the game, and this is why he went out of the game at the after less than 3 minutes in his first shift, there are so many ways to attack them from a scoring perspective that they can't defend. And that's why they call that early timeout and get them out of the game. And then if you go to the Nance option, you're switchier, but you run into the thing Darius always talks about, which is the, like, now you have somebody who can't box AD out, like, ever, trying to box him out. AD just dominates. He led the NBA in second chance points this season. And so, Mike, that is something that, like, every kind of path they can go, I think, runs into some, well, what about this type of problem? So we could continue to talk that out, but yeah.
Yeah, that was my point. There's one other thing. Let's take a second break. There's one other point that I want to make about AD specifically that I think had some blood boiling on the evening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, Pete, you just mentioned the stat, right? AD, the second chance points and the leader. Larry Nance, who I will first acknowledge, I love personally. He's a great guy. He's one of those guys who he's been around the teams that he's been. You know, he goes over. He knows all the broadcasters. He knows all the trainers. He's just a good dude. So everybody, he's always nice to talk to him. He's a Chelsea guy. So, you know, he and I are always arguing about that. He knows that I'm a Man United guy. So he likes to rub that in, how much we suck and we do, although we are ahead of Chelsea right now in the standings. And Nance was doing something because he knows that he can't handle AD in the glass. And so AD's going up and Nance is giving him that push in the back and that nudge. And the third one of those is what hurt AD. And AD, while making sure in his post game to say, like, I know Larry's not a dirty player, like, but like, don't do that, man. Don't do that. And that was, so that's, but it just speaks to Larry is a smart guy. He knows he has no chance unless he does something like that. He got, and very few players do. And I'm not saying that it's dirty, but like there's kind of a fine line between the mastery of the arts of leverage and like using the things that you have to do to try to win versus crossing the line. And that's just, I'm not here to, you know, again, debate the merits of Nance and whether it's dirty or not, but it's just that it just shows that that's what New Orleans has to try and do something, because that you can put two bodies on them, doesn't matter. Go right over the top, and AD is strong. So I just thought that was interesting. And again, watching it back and showing the desperation of what they're trying to do just to handle Anthony Davis. And that's just one of the things that AD does so well against them. Darius, I also like you talk about how he gets into his kind of take a couple dribbles and find a rhythm and then the J falls. He had that going a couple times in the second half, you know, so there were all kinds of things working. I just think that threat of him inside, because you can't play Valanciunas and there isn't another big to use, is just overwhelming.
Yeah, New Orleans certainly has an AD problem. They had it from about 8 months before they traded him to the Lakers, and he started to not want to be a problem for them anymore in general. It's interesting. 3 or 4 plays before his back started to spasm, he took like 4 or 5 straight hits from Valanciunas in like a post-up play as well. So there's a bit of a physicality play in general that I think New Orleans would be wise to try to go to in the early going. I do not expect them to change their starting lineup. I don't expect Nance will be the starter against AD and jumping center. I do think it will be Valanciunas. And in the same way that LeBron tested Andrew Wiggins' ribs in that decisive game in the playoffs last spring, I'd expect Valanciunas to say, how's your back holding up?
Yep.
We might go do a couple of early post-ups and see if you're going to stand in there against me, basically just ramming my shoulder right into your sternum. And let's see if that affects your back at all.
Pete, switching tacks a little bit on this. why does it seem to be so easy for Reeves and Russell to get good looks in this matchup? And, you know, I Austin was decisive. You know, when he turns the corner and just gets downhill and he's at the rim before the defense, he did that like three or four times. You know, Russell's getting his rhythm. I get part of this is related to them not being able to handle like LeBron and Rui and AD, but specifically, what were they doing well and how can they continue to expose New Orleans like that?
So I think that that's partially a roster weakness from New Orleans. I think that when you really turn the dial toward rangy wings as the Pelicans have, that sometimes guys can be too tall to guard a player. Like, I think there's basically three different ways that a player can win their individual matchup. One is on the ground with their speed. One is with their strength, kind of, you know, bumping a guy, but it's, you know, in the strike zone between the knees and shoulders. And then one is with their length, kind of in jumping ability, but the vertical plane is another place that a player can get an advantage over another guy. And when you over-index so heavily on guys who are like 6'6", 6'7", and kind of a taller, higher center of gravity, the shorter guys who have the lower center of gravity and can capitalize on creating that separation. Like the way we opened up the second half of the last game against them, both Austin and D'Lo were just slicing and dicing them. And part of it was them coming off of screens and a taller player trying to chase them around. And it was like two kids playing freeze tag and they're really good. And they're that little, that smaller kid that like, good luck catching him type of thing. And so, and then their other guy is CJ, right? And so CJ McCollum has to guard somebody as well. And there are different advantages that are created there. I also think that like Herb Jones, it's a little harder for him to guard a guy like LeBron versus some other guys. He's not quite as strong as an Aaron Gordon, for example. Now, wonderful defender, but I just think that it's maybe a little bit of a tougher matchup for him there. But yeah, what are your thoughts, D, on the guard point?
Yeah, I just think that CJ isn't a great defender and Herb Jones is going to get run through and off a lot of screens. And D'Lo is not the shiftiest guy, but he, for about 4 months now, he's been a guy who just isn't always, he's not just going to stand in the same place and let you just guard him. He's constantly trying to set a back screen and slip. He's trying to come off of a ball screen high. He's screening away and then flashing in into the middle. He's not Steph Curry out there or anything like that, but he is not a statue where it allows Jones or whoever is guarding him to just sort of become a helper and understand that it's like, okay, well, if I leave you, when I come back, you're going to be exactly where I was. Mike, you know this as a father of three kids, but the craziest part of being a parent is when your kid goes from I don't move around like because they're a baby to like, oh, now I'm doing the ramp up thing and I'm crawling around. And if you leave your baby somewhere, they are no longer where you left them. There was
I'm just laughing at this because my little sister has a daughter and she doesn't move a lot. Like she just turned one. She still doesn't move a lot. The boys never had a moment where they weren't moving. Even when they were like super little, scooting, crawl. I mean, always moving, man. Darius, you have two daughters. I know one of them is a stud athlete, lefty. But yeah, I never had the moment like that at all. And so it was just more like adding the third that never stops moving to the two that always move. Was the complete. Anyway, you had me cracking up there.
So I just think that the Lakers guards are challenging for a lot of teams, right? It's one of the reasons why Golden State is just like, yeah, you know what? We're going to put Klay Thompson on LeBron because we want our best two perimeter defenders on D'Lo and Austin to try to disrupt them because they're such a critical part to what the Lakers do. And so a lot of teams are going to have problems against the Lakers guards. Pete, I have a question for you, and it's about Zion again. And Zion did not have too many defensive possessions against LeBron, but he did have a few. And a couple of times, LeBron ended up empty mm-hmm. on those possessions and ended up like kind of looking to the ref like, I got hit here. Isn't this a foul? He's undercutting me a little bit or he's into my body some. And I'm wondering whether or not this is a game where you envision the Pelicans saying, you know what, like, you're the only dude on our team that actually has a physical chance against this guy, right? We talked about LeBron and Rui both have a physical chance against Zion, but that's very rare. Few teams around the league have a guy who has a physical profile that could sort of bang with LeBron and still has foot speed and quickness and leaping ability and athleticism and everything else. We have not yet seen Zion take that on as a full-time challenge, but he has done that in other games. I've seen him like defend Kawhi, defend Durant. He's taken on some challenges, but he has not done the LeBron one yet. Again, this is a kitchen sink game plan. What do you think about New Orleans' defensive matchups against the Lakers' offense and LeBron being the key to what the Lakers do? And how do they try to limit what LeBron just did with a triple-double, 17 assists, and everything else?
Yeah, no, so I love the Zion adjustment. I think what you said earlier about it cutting both ways applies here too, where that whole idea of Zion being the one guy that Herb Jones might not have the physical tools, but Zion certainly does. And I've seen that too from Zion defensively. And he has sort of that, remember when Julius was with the Lakers and he would be really activated as a switcher and out on the perimeter, and he's so big, but also fast in short area quickness that he can get steals and be disruptive on the perimeter. And this is just always the principle of just do what you can do. And I think that Zion has some of that. And that's part of why when we were talking before the last game that I thought Zion was playing some of the best basketball of his career is that, like, I did see some seriousness on the defensive end that he might not be a conventional interior big defensively, but he can certainly help out. And I think that then – so putting him on LeBron, I do think is an adjustment that we might see. If that's something that LeBron struggles with, I think that you can I think that one of the adjustments then is to put LeBron off of the ball, because I think LeBron could really, as a cutter and as a relocator, as a shooter, like, still get the ball to LeBron, but have Zion have to track both ball and LeBron off of the ball. And so the Lakers, and that's part of really the great work that the team has done throughout the course of the year with the growth throughout the five-out offense and everybody really kind of learning what they do within this. They've got such a broad menu of options now on offense where it's like, okay, you have this tool to be able to take that away, but we can really go to this instead, that I think is a source of great optimism for me going forward. But I think it certainly starts on the defensive end. So any closing thoughts, Mike?
Just the real quick thing I was thinking of for last was just, you know, how much did guys play last game in the rotation? Was about as expected, right? Reddish gets trimmed out. Christie gets trimmed out. Vincent plays 13 minutes off the bench. Hayes plays 12. Torian Prince played 20. And we should note, I thought that was one of Torian Prince's better games.
Yes.
He was really good, played his role really well, hit his open shots. He only took one three, actually. Dinwiddie played 14 minutes, and then you had like 38 for Russell, which was interesting to me, him playing that much as opposed to maybe like in this game. I wouldn't be surprised to see like a little bit more Gabe in some context, depending on how the game goes. And then Austin only played 29. AD, of course, limited by the foul trouble, plays 33. And that's why I think you saw Hayes play a little bit more. That's just interesting to me. I wondered if anything stood out to you guys about rotation and what the Pelicans put out there will clearly impact that.
The big thing that stood out to me was the group at the end of the first quarter and the third quarter, where it was actually Rui at the four instead of Prince at the four. And I was just like, oh, because I really think this team could be so good if we're just not oddly small at different points of the game. And so that was I was really worried about that particular group going into that game. So seeing Rui in those minutes instead, D, we've been kind of pining for Jackson Hayes to fill those minutes, but I'm totally fine with it being Rui. That kind of accomplishes a very similar type of thing.
This is one of the third or fourth games where Rui's played the entire first quarter as a definite coaching adjustment to the rotation in order to try to get him more minutes. And I thought that was super effective. My last closing thought is whenever you play a team a second time in a close amount of space, there is a strong tendency for the losing coach to say, what did we do poorly? Where did the other team kick our ass? And how can we do something to stop that? The Lakers killed them in points in the paint. Mm-hmm. And it would not surprise me if this is a game where it's just like Austin, D'Lo, Prince, all these guys, you're going to get a bigger diet of three-point opportunities because we are not going to get beat in the same way this game. Like, I think they're going to weak side tag Pete. They're going to take away the roll from AD. They're going to close down the post. They're going to start to double. They're going to do all kinds of stuff to say, you're not getting in here so easily so that you can score 60, 70 points in the paint against us again. And that's where the Lakers have been a very good three-point shooting team for the last like 2 or 3 months. But I think that will get tested because New Orleans' best lineups do not have rim protection. And the Lakers hunted that as a solution to whatever offensive, like that was their point of entry, Pete. And I think New Orleans is going to try to do everything they can to say, you're not getting us the same way two games in a row.
The Lakers are better. They have matchup advantages, but New Orleans could absolutely win this game. They're a good team, and they have enough to do it. So it's something, Pete, that's on the table, and we'll see how the Lakers respond.
We will, and we'll be back to discuss how it went after the game. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.